Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me. Today on American Glutton, I talk to Kumail Nanjiani. He's an actor and comedian and has undergone a radical body transformation. He has all the abs. Please enjoy our talk. Kumail.
I'm sitting outside. It's such a gorgeous day.
It really is a beautiful day. And we've had so few beautiful days recently.
I know. In a way, it's been honestly kind of a blessing because I don't trust people to take this seriously. So in a way, all the rain, I'm like, good, stay home.
I've been thinking, like, if they could have cooked up the perfect weather to keep people inside in California, they did it.
It was like it never rains, and then suddenly since this, it's just been raining constantly. It's perfect.
It's perfect. But then the flip side is on days like today, when the hills are green for the first time in 6 months, there's an extra bit of a calling to go outside.
Just the smog is gone, and you can look so much farther. It's like absolutely beautiful right now. We still, you know, we go on walks. We're very careful. We put on masks and stuff, but we go on walks, and it just, the air quality is so much nicer because my wife, Emily, has like this, you know, she's in a high-risk group, and one of the reasons is because she's got some lung issues. So she's very aware of air quality all the time.
Right.
Like she could tell the difference. She's a canary in the coal mine. And it's been like, you know, that part of it isn't great for her.
Yeah. I mean, when we look outside, it seems clearer. And then there's all that data I saw out of China, which kind of in the midst of the shutdown, that certainly the areas over Wuhan, the carbon coming out of there had diminished by a massive rate.
No, man, we've made a hell on earth for ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. in more ways than one, too, I'm afraid. All right. I wanted to ask you, I definitely want to talk about, I want to get into eventually some of this COVID stuff and what you're doing at home, but I'm really interested in kind of anyone changing their body in any way, actually. And we met a long time ago, and you, I would have never picked you as a guy who ever even thought about your body, and maybe you didn't, but you did massively transform. And I want to know what that was like, and what, was there any psychological aspect to it that was difficult, and how did you do it?
Well, that's a good question, you know, because I have always, and I was trying to think about this, I was like, why did I have this image of like this perfect male body in my head? And it might have been, you know, being a fan of Arnold and being a fan of Sylvester Stallone, like in the 80s, you know, like I loved Commando, watched that over and over, watched Terminator over and over, watched the Conan movies, like. So I always was honestly really like, I was really jealous of, this is going to sound weird, but I was always very aware of who was in shape, who wasn't in shape, who's like male body, I thought aesthetically was pleasing, you know? So it was something I was very, very aware of. And I would always notice, like since I can remember. And to be honest, I had a weird relationship with food and also my own body, especially in my teen years, from probably, I know that's weird for so many, you know, that era is so weird for so many people, but from the age of probably about 12 to, I would say my mid-20s, I had a, you know, I didn't like how I looked at all. Mm-hmm. And I became very acutely aware of how there were a lot of men in better shape than me, you know? So that was something that, it was one of those things that when I was 12 or 13, I'd assume like at some point I'm going to look like that. I'm going to have abs and I'm going to be in good shape. And just kind of never happened because my relationship with food had been just sort of weird. Like as someone who'd never been really, really overweight, I spent a lot of time thinking about it. I weigh myself every day and I have for years and years and years, like well before this transformation, you know.
Really?
And so, yeah, I've had a weird thing with it. I don't have body dysmorphia. That's a very strong word. Although I can feel a little bit of it creeping in every now and then now that I've done this specific transformation. But yeah, I've been weighing myself every single day for at least 10 years, maybe a little bit longer than that. And I would sort of go on diets, and then I would completely like binge some days and like really just, I call it going wood chipper. I would go wood chipper and just like shove food into my face, and then I'd feel the guilt from it and all this stuff. So I remember when I was like 13 or something, one of the first chains we got in Pakistan was KFC. We got Kentucky Fried Chicken. That was one of the first like Western food chains we got. And I remember going there, eating, loving the food so much, and then the tremendous amount of guilt I felt afterwards. I remember that feeling so specifically, like this sort of crushing guilt and in some ways dislike of myself for doing what I'd done. And so, wow, man, I don't know if any of this is getting to your question, but just to say that wanting to be in great shape was something that I've been thinking about forever, and I just had not been able to commit myself to doing it for all these reasons and more.
No, but it does get to the question, because I think it's all perspective, certainly, but like I would have looked at a guy like you from even 10 years ago and gone, he's perfect. Do you know what I mean? And I know that that's totally subjective, and that we could all have desires of where to get and what to get to. But I find it fascinating that I really do find it fascinating that I think a lot more people are thinking a lot more deeply about this than I give credit to.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I never, 10 years ago, even though I thought I looked fine, there was briefly a time I remember right before I met Emily, and that would have been 2006, so 14 years ago. There was briefly a time where I was like, where I was exercising a lot, watching what I eat. I didn't do the transformation that I didn't look how I look now, but I was like pretty lean. I was in decent shape. But then once I started dating Emily, I just kind of started eating a lot more French fries. And so there was, after a couple of years after I met Emily, I sort of was like, okay, I am not in good shape. I don't like how I look. And I sort of stayed like that for a very long time. You know, like I didn't like taking my shirt off even in front of Emily. By the way, now you can't get a shirt on me. I've become insufferable. And so, I had this issue for a long time. And then honestly, it was November of 2018, I had this meeting with Marvel, and they basically were like, we want you to play this character. He's a superhero, and his secret identity is that he's a Bollywood movie star. And in that meeting, my first thought was, okay, now I'm going to get in the shape that I've wanted to get into since I was 12 years old. You know, I knew in that moment that it was going to happen, that I was going to do it. You know, those moments, I'm sure you've had it too, where there's something you've been trying for a long time, or something you want for a long time, and then there's one moment where you're like, oh, okay, now I'm locked in, and there's no doubt it's going to happen.
Yes.
Like, the other thing for me was, you know, I was a cigarette smoker for a long time. Not for a long time, for a few years. I quit a long time ago. But I tried to quit like 6 or 7 times. But then the last time I quit, when I was like, oh, that was my last cigarette, I just knew that that was what was going to be. I knew that I had quit for good. I don't know what it was. I don't know why. But it was that same feeling now where I was like, okay, now next year I'm going to be in the best shape of my life. And so the transformation, you know, the hard thing in the beginning was there were a couple of things that were tough, right? Was there's a deadline. The movie starts shooting at a specific time. So you have to get in shape like on schedule, which is at that point, it was about 8 or 9 months I had. It took me, ended up taking me a little bit longer than that. So there's always this thing in the back of your head that's like, what if I don't get there in time?
Right.
And then just getting through the actual workout. We have the same trainer, you and I, Grant. It was amazing.
Amazing.
And in the beginning, those workouts were physically so difficult. did start affecting me psychologically. Like, I would sort of think about, you know, I knew when the next workout was coming, I'd get really scared. Getting over the psychological aspect of it was tricky. Getting over the amount of physical pain that you would go through for an hour and a half every other day was tricky for the first couple months, honestly. I talked about this before, but I honestly had to like change my relationship to pain. Like, I remember being like, okay, my whole life is geared towards avoiding pain, and now I have to rewire my brain to want pain. Like, I have to be able to chase the pain, right? And I know this sounds weird, but I had to do it. I had to be like, oh, if it hurts, you have to make it hurt a little bit more. And if it doesn't hurt, you have to make it hurt. Like, and you have to hurt a little more than you hurt last time. And that was a big corner for me, you know, that turned a big corner for me. And then with the nutrition stuff, I realized while I was worrying about what I was eating, I wasn't really that knowledgeable about it. So really, really learning how my body reacts to specific foods, what foods make me feel good, what foods give me energy, what foods take away energy from me, what foods will allow me to achieve this goal that I had. You know, that was the other aspect of it. And I learned a lot in this last year and a half.
Touch on two things. The thing with pain, I think, is so key. I kind of learned that riding bicycles. My entire life was spent exerting myself as little as possible and experiencing as little physical discomfort as possible. And then there's just a total mental shift where if you want to ride a bike for a long period of time, and I was up to like 400 miles a week on a bike at one point. Yeah, you have to enjoy suffering. Like, that's a huge part of it. So it really does start with just thinking about it differently. And then eventually, like you said, like, you have to push it. It has to become more and more like we do with weightlifting, progressive overload. Like, it can't just be the same every day, because you'll adapt and you'll no longer be experiencing that discomfort, which means that you're progressing. So that, I think, is very key, like what our relationship and what our understanding of pain is, because obviously pain can be too much and we can damage ourselves and then we can't continue on this journey. And that's certainly not it, but it is a rethinking, a restructuring thought around what the idea of pain is. That's very insightful. Talking about your relationship with food, because you're not necessarily no carb. You eat carbohydrates, right?
I was very, very low carb during the shooting of the movie. So that was an interesting journey too. My sort of how I did, because I did a bulk and then I did a cut. And that cut, in a way, was a real mindfuck. Because that I learned a lot there, and I probably didn't approach things. I would not advise someone to approach things the way I approached them. Eventually, ultimately, my results were good, but the journey wasn't, it just didn't give me as much confidence as it should have. So, but now, you know, I do eat carbs. I eat carbs every day. But I do track how many carbs I eat, and I track how much protein I eat, and I track how much fat I eat. So I'm not no carb now, no.
Right. And that was one of the things when we talked about carbs, and I was like, do you eat rice? You said no. Rice is kind of off the table.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I still haven't had rice. So the last time I had rice, real rice, was... couldn't even tell you, man. I honestly couldn't tell you.
It's amazing because it's such a part, like, it's such an easy carb for me. You know, a cup is 45 grams of carbohydrates. Like, I know it so well, but your relationship with it causes you to stay away from it.
Yeah, I just love it too much. You know, I'm Pakistani. We grew up with obviously eating rice all the time, and I just love rice so much. I know I can't open that door. You know, it's like heroin. Like, I can't just do a little bit of it. And this last year and a half, I've just learned so much. And honestly, you know, I'm very proud of the lifestyle changes I made. It is one of the things that I'm most proud of that I've ever done. And I just don't want to jeopardize that. And I just know that rice is a bad one for me.
I think of pasta as a bad one for me. And for me, it's pasta and kind of high fat stuff. So like I stay away from cheese, and I could very easily set my macros for the day that would allow me to have cheese or pasta, but those are the things that I, you know, stay away from.
Yeah, see, I have no affinity for pasta. I haven't even had pasta, like, I probably haven't had pasta in the last few months, but just because I don't, Pakistani food doesn't really have a lot of pasta, so I didn't grow up, like, loving pasta. You know, for me, it's bread and rice, and so I completely cut out rice. Now, bread, I'll do, and, you know, I try and keep my carbs to fruit, potatoes, sweet potatoes, like those kinds of things. And then here's my newest thing that I do is I love like sweets a lot. I love pastries a lot. And I had to be like, I can't live without that stuff. You know, I just cannot. I lived without it for a long time while I was shooting the movie, but I was like, I just too much joy from it. And so I do now, basically for a year, I ate no refined sugar. Now I will eat refined sugar every now and then and sort of build into my macros, like eating a pastry.
You know, since the shutdown has happened, we go into the store and certain things are out, and, you know, the stores are in the areas that we live. I wasn't finding rice for a while. And then I went into this one small market, and there were pallets of 20-pound bags of rice. And my first thought was to text you. And I had to stop myself because I was like, I don't know that just because there's a shutdown that he started eating rice again. What a terrible thing to text him if he's not eating it. But you've got the pastries. The pastries are the way to go.
Yeah, right now it's pastries because because you can do, you know, there's not, with pastries, they're all so different that there's like not one taste that I get addicted to. Whereas with rice, with white rice, just plain white rice, I could honestly just eat plain white rice for days on end. And I used to.
Yeah.
And I just like that flavor. I just had to get out of my head. I just had to be able to live without it, because what I'm giving up ultimately is a lot smaller than what I'm gaining from giving it up.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, for me, it's a no-brainer. You know, and then if we get into like the ideas of body dysmorphia to a greater or lesser degree, I'm doing maintenance right now. So I'm kind of riding out this whole thing, not trying to gain or lose weight. And every day that I'm not losing weight, I just perceive that I'm fatter, which I'm exercising and the scale is telling me I'm the same weight, but it's hard for me to not see a fatter person.
That is so extremely relatable to me because, and I think I got stuck in that mindset when I sort of had to do a cut before the movie. So basically, last year, I started, you know, I was shooting something else, but I started working with Grant. I was out of town and I would do workouts that he told me, but I didn't really dial it in until, let's say, end of February, right? And the movie started shooting in September. So I did a bulk where I ate protein, but I also ate, Grant was like, you got to eat a lot of carbs, you got to eat a lot of fats. We just want to put as much muscle on you as we can, and then we'll get the fat out, right? I went from about, I was about 146 pounds, which is pretty small, to 175 pounds. Now, that a lot of that was fat because those pictures that I posted on Instagram, the shirtless pictures.
The thirsty
shirtless pics. I'm about 152 pounds there. So if you think I go up to 175, and now I had to lose like almost 25 pounds. So that really became, I was like, okay, I've miscalculated. The movie starts shooting in 3 months. I got to lose all this weight. And so I was getting on the scale every day. And at that point, every day the scale is the same is a big failure.
Right.
And now I'm feeling like that too, even though I'm like, yo, I'm just trying to maintain. I'm not trying to gain or lose weight right now. But when I get on a scale and I see that the number is the same as yesterday, part of like, I'm like rewired. It's like a Pavlovian thing. I'm like rewired to feel bad a little bit. And I have to like talk myself out of it.
Yeah. I find that I'm talking myself through this kind of stuff every day. And it's like, I did my workout. Today's workout was higher reps and sets than last week's workout on this day. So I'm progressively overloading. I haven't gained weight. Like, I literally have to recite these things like a mantra just to like settle myself down. It's wild.
Dude, I had this thing where, you know, I sort of talked about this, but when I look in the mirror, for the first 5 seconds, I look great. And then I see my body change in front of me. I see literally, I look in the mirror in the morning, I look at myself, I look good, and I literally physically see my body change in 5 seconds. And then I only see the flaws, right? I only see like, oh, that doesn't look as good as like, oh, that needs to be developed. That's what happened. This will look better last or whatever. Emily did this exercise with me. This was just last week, dude. She was like, look in the mirror, cover your face, and pretend that's just a guy you saw somewhere. How would you feel about that body? And honestly, that exercise really helped gain a little bit of perspective. Obviously, there's no like magic bullet. It doesn't change immediately, but that was I do that now. When I look and I don't like how I look, I cover my face. I say, you just saw that guy at the beach. How do you feel about how he looks? And that sort of helps me a little bit.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense because I generally walk around thinking everybody looks great. You know, it's yeah. It's pretty rare that I'm actually critical of another person's body. It's gotten a little weird in the arena of bodybuilding because I was like you as a kid, like growing up, Stallone and Schwarzenegger were kind of the epitome of perfection. And now we've got guys that are like, even if you look at like Ronnie Coleman compared to Schwarzenegger, it's like, what? This is crazy. Look at his traps. Look at all the definition in all the different places. Like, you look at some pictures of Schwarzenegger, he doesn't even have abs, or he has like 4 abs, you know?
Yeah, totally. I think Arnold to me is the best. That's like, to me, the pinnacle of like the muscular male body, because like you're saying, these guys are so big now. They're so vascular. They don't look healthy. Like the color of their skin is weird. The skin is also so tight. It's like tapers thin. It just doesn't look good. Whereas Arnold looked huge, but also like healthy.
Yeah, he really did. He did not look unhealthy at all.
No. And so, I also got into watching like bodybuilding documentaries. And I had to stop because that was also fucking with my head, where I would like look in the mirror. I would honestly watch a documentary, love watching it, have a great time. I'd watch it alone. Emily has zero interest. and then I'd go look in the mirror and I would feel so inadequate. And I had to make a decision to stop watching those documentaries and unfollow a lot of those people on Instagram.
Really?
Yeah, because those guys, man, some of those guys are just so, they just look, I'm like, I'm never going to look like that. And that's okay. I don't want to look like that, but still, it just fucks with my head.
Yeah, I think it fucks with my head a little bit too. My wife has caught, like, turned on the TV and seen that I had been watching Generation Iron or one of these things.
Yeah, dude.
And just gone like, what are you doing? Like this, I was not up for any of this. Like, I don't know what's happening here. And I agree. I'm never going to look like any of those guys either. But when I do the math, I realize like I'm as big as Arnold Schwarzenegger, if not more muscular. So if I just lose fat only, I'll be bigger than he was, which doesn't make sense to me either.
Dude, you look great. I can say this. I've seen a shirtless picture of you. You look amazing.
Well, I appreciate that.
Really, really.
Mid maintenance, I don't feel like you can, like we haven't seen each other in a while now. So
no, but I, dude, it's not, I can, the perspective I don't have for myself, I have for other people. And I'm telling you, last time I saw you was what, like month and a half, 2 months ago, and you've been maintaining. If anything, you look better now.
It's very kind of you. I appreciate that. And this whole thing was designed to get a compliment out of you.
Hey man, if you told me, we could have done a much shorter podcast. I would have done it right off the bat.
Yeah. By the way, I think you look fucking insane. You have every ab that I want.
Thank you. I don't know, man. There's one down there that could use a little definition, and I'm not even joking. Here's what it is. Here's the issue, as you were talking about progressive overload, right? I've sort of been trained. Everything I do, it's like you never think you're done. You always want to get a little better, right? You want to get a little funnier. You want to get a little better at acting. I play video games. I want to get better at that. I play sports games. I want to get better at that. You're just sort of trained to get a little bit better each time. And so even with working out, like if I had seen a picture of myself today, if I'd seen it 2 years ago, I'd be like, perfect, hit save on that, don't want to change a thing.
Yeah.
But now that I'm here, I want to keep pushing it, right? It's not enough now. I'm doing the progressive overload thing too. You know, obviously we all are, but in quarantine, it's become more important to me somehow. Like, and I think part of it's that so much of our lives are out of our control that the things you can control, you really want to control. And to me, so much of, and this is, there's a good and a bad part to this, but so much of the working out and diet is about control. And so as control in other arenas of my life has disappeared, I've poured it all into this. So when I work out these days, my workouts are so intense and so fucking hard. And I'm pushing myself so much every single time. And so it just feels like it's not enough. Like you want more, you want to push it more. You want to get a little leaner. You want a little more definition. You want to, you know, that stuff.
Yeah. I find that I'm going to failure a lot more because I don't have, you know, unlike normally if I'm doing a bench press on my own, I'm not ever really going anywhere near failure because I don't want to be the guy with the barbell stuck on my chest in the gym.
Right. But
at home, I'm doing relatively, I don't have dumbbells that are going to compete with anything I could do at the gym. And it's either that or push-ups. So I wind up going to failure, but then I get psychologically screwed because 3 hours later, I feel like I did nothing because it was all body weight or light dumbbells. So even though I couldn't do them anymore, I haven't taxed myself in quite the same way. And I'm talking to people who are going like, this is all you need to do to maintain through this period of time. Don't worry. But, you know, going to the gym and lifting really heavy things, I can definitely not be able to do that the next day. And I find that everything I'm doing is repeatable every day, basically.
Like they said, it's just a different way of training. And I'll tell you, man, when I was shooting the movie, I was doing basically, you know, the traditional split, which you and I both do because we've seen each other at the gym, is you split up your body parts and you hit them once or twice a week, right? And you give them a couple rest days. When I was shooting Eternals, I was doing basically the same workout, full body workout, every day. And I would do a heavy day, I would do a light day, I'd do a heavy day, I would do a light day with high reps, right? So I was like hitting chest every single day. And I'll tell you, even though I never felt sore, I felt like I could do it every day, I'm telling you, I got really a lot stronger very quickly.
Right. Right. I think gotta be it. Yeah.
And so now that I have, obviously I don't have access to a gym and I have a very limited equipment, I'm sort of back to doing the work that I was doing then. So I'm doing basically full body workout every day. And I can again feel myself getting stronger.
I guess I am too, because the first week that just the volume of push-ups has gotten much greater. So that's a sign of strength. But then I get hung up on, well, no, is that a sign of endurance and not strength? And you know what I mean? I'm just bitching at this point, though. I'm not.
No, but well, I've read. First of all, let me say I understand your bitching. Like, I completely relate to it. Like, I fucking get it, man. Like, we think the same way about this. But I've read a lot of scientific papers about this stuff. Like, I got, you know, everyone says they're a nerd, but I genuinely am a nerd in the way, like, traditional nerd, right? Like, comic book, video game, horror movies, sci-fi movies, being really into science as a kid. So I really got into the science of this last year, and I read a lot of different papers. And the new hotness in weightlifting is higher volume every day, doing sort of a full body every day rather than just like once or twice a week is a better, you know, gives you better hypertrophy. And so going to, you know, you're like increasing your endurance. Muscles grow in different ways. You can lift heavy weights like five reps, and that'll make you grow. But also doing like 100 push-ups will also make you grow. It's just doing all the different kinds of things you can.
Right. Yeah, I do think that this kind of disruption is actually good, because you can get kind of set into a routine, and that can also adversely affect growth, you know?
Exactly. And I think so much of, for me, you know, we were saying earlier when we were talking about like changing your relationship to pain, the next step of that is you go from hating the gym, tolerating the gym, to loving the gym, right? Like, you love working out, right?
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I love working out too. And so for me, this disruption has been good, because I am now a lot more tuned to like, okay, what do I want to do today? What will I enjoy doing today? Because right now, to be honest, the pressure I'm putting on working out is heavy, because I have anxiety. I mean, we all do right now. We have anxiety. We're a little scared. There's so much like crazy shit going on in the world. I rely on my workouts to make me feel better. I don't know if that's healthy or not, but I genuinely do. I work out every day, and in the afternoon, like, I just finished working out and I had like my protein shake right before talking to you. I look forward to the workout, and I need it to make me less stressed. I need it to make me less anxious. I need it to make me feel outside of myself. You know, I feel like I'm like really in my head a lot. And so now, because of that, I'm a lot more intentional about what exercises can I do that I will enjoy. Whereas when I go to the gym, you sort of have a plan. You do like a press exercise, then you do a fly, then you do this, and you do this. You can sort of go on autopilot, right?
Yeah.
Now I feel like I'm really wanting to do the stuff that I really enjoy. And I'm realizing, oh yeah, every workout should feel like this. Every workout should feel, you should feel engaged through every rep of every set. That's the goal.
That's a great way to put it. I hadn't thought of that at all. I definitely know that, you know, in kind of real life, or whatever real life was prior to all of this, that the days that I went to the gym were better days. And I know on the few days that I haven't worked out since this started, they have been by orders of magnitude worse days for me. And so, yeah. I use it in that way. It is almost medicinal, but I haven't thought of it in terms that you're putting it, like figuring out the things that I do. I just kind of also have my plan written out, and I'm sticking to my plan. But I think that's very smart, because there are certainly exercises that I do on my own that increase that feeling exponentially. And I could probably just focus on those some more. But I'm basically doing what you're doing too, a full body workout every day.
Yeah, I think, you know, if there's an exercise, this is what I've been doing. If there's an exercise that I'm like dreading doing it, what I do is the issue is, right, like if you want to you just are limited, right? There aren't that many machines available to us right now. So what I will do is I'll superset that exercise with something that I do enjoy doing. Or some days I'll superset that with the other exercise I don't like doing. And I'm like, all right, this is going to be the little part of it that's not going to feel good, but it's not going to feel good for like this amount of time. And then you can go do something that you do enjoy doing, you know? And also I've been changing up the workouts based on, you know, as I get bored of exercises and stuff. So I'm trying to enjoy the workouts as much as I can. I'm also taking this opportunity to sort of be like, to work on like my weak points, you know, just like specifically strength-wise, what my weak muscles are. So I'm trying to be like, okay, since I don't have access to a lot of different movements, what are the things I can do to sort of help my lagging, the lagging areas?
That's really smart. And you notice that you're getting stronger in those areas.
Yeah, for sure. So for instance, my biceps have always been weak, you know, they just haven't been. I just know compared to the rest of my body, I've worked out with guys who can push the weight I can push, but then they can do more with their biceps than I can. And I just have always known my biceps are sort of a weak point. So I've really, really been focusing on a lot of bicep work. And I've honestly noticed a difference. My arms have grown and my t-shirts do feel a little bit tighter. Part of it is I just don't like training biceps. I find it very boring. And now that I'm forced myself to do it in the beginning, and I can like start seeing and feeling the difference, now that motivates me to keep going, even though it's not my favorite like body part to work on. Now I actually am a little excited to work on it.
Right. Yeah. That kind of those improvements are the things that keep me going the most, any kind of improvement. And usually it's visual for me where I actually see a difference. And it tends to be something I haven't been paying attention to. And then all of a sudden I notice it.
Exactly. And that's what I have noticed with my biceps. I can feel, like I said, the shirts are a little bit tighter. The other area, you know, that I had traditionally never worked on, but then last year I really worked on, was abs, right? I was like, okay, I don't have a strong core and I really, really want like abs that pop, right? Like it was an aesthetic thing. It was a shallow thing. And so last year's big project was shoulders and abs. Like I really spent a lot of time working on those. And I think those, I got it to a pretty good place. But now that we're in quarantine times, I'm like, okay, let's see if I can push them a little bit more, because I've sort of been coasting on those areas a little bit. And I was like, okay, now let's see if I can make more improvement.
Right. Well, I think when I think about like the most impressive guys more recently, like obviously we talked about Schwarzenegger and Stallone when we were kids, but like more recently, I just think about, like, you know, obviously The Rock looks great, but really I always go to Brad Pitt in Fight Club. And I think all he really had going for him was abs and shoulders. Like, he was not a big guy. He was a pretty small guy. And your abs and shoulders, like, I feel like they're pretty on point. So any increase, any improvement there is going to be outstanding.
Oh, thanks, man. That means so much. Thank you. Yeah, that it's true. I've looked up Brad Pitt from Fight Club, and in my head, I remembered him being big. But you're right; he's not that big. He's aesthetically, he looks great.
Yeah,
you know, he's just, some people just have muscles that are like shaped right, you know. And Brad Pitt's one of those guys. Like, his abs and his like pecs and his shoulders, just like the shape of them is good. There are some guys who, you know, they'll get huge and they'll look great, but you could see that just like it's just not the same genetic thing. Brad Pitt just has that genetic thing, you know. He still looks great. Did you see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Yeah, he looks awesome. I think genetics are a big part of why he looks so awesome. Yeah, he looks incredible.
Yeah, he does. But, you know, for me, I'm like, I do want to get a little bit bigger because you're like a big, muscular guy. You know, I'm never obviously going to be as big as you. Like, we just are completely different structures. But I do want to get a little bit bigger. Like, so in the movie, while I was shooting the movie, once I got it dialed in, I was being 150 and 152 pounds. And you really have to maintain pretty steadily because the super suit you're wearing is like really molded to your body. So you can't lose or gain weight. So I kept about 150 to 152. Right now I'm 155. But I do want to see if I can get into, at some point, I don't know how long it would take, like add another 5 pounds, but still stay pretty lean. You know, that's the, I want to get a little bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. I am 260 right now. And that my goal will be once quarantine ends, I'll go back to cutting. And then my ultimate goal is like to really see what putting a couple pounds of muscle will even be like. But I think it's going to be just for me incredibly hard and take a long, long time because I'm going to have a lot of mental issues with gaining weight on purpose.
Sure, because you've had obviously such a specific journey, you know. It's really impressive, man. I mean, I saw a picture of you from, I don't know when it was, but your transformation is just so impressive. And what's impressive about it, and this, I think, must be the hardest thing for people. Certainly one of the hardest things for me in doing this transformation was just how long it takes, right? You can go to the gym, get your ass kicked for 2 hours, eat like nothing but, you know, protein and just like chicken breast all day and egg whites. And the next day you don't see a difference.
Yeah.
That's what's hard about it. You can't like if I'm like learning lines for a movie, right? I sit down for an hour, I learn my lines. I know those lines. You test me in 10 hours. I know those lines. I see the change has happened. With fitness, you don't see the change the next day. You don't see the change the next week. Maybe in a month, you might see a little something, but probably not. You have to trust the process. To me, that's like the hardest part of this. And for you to like the drastic change you've done and how long you had to stick to it, at the level you probably had to stick to it too, it just takes, it's really impressive. It takes a lot of mental fortitude.
It does. And I think what you're saying is absolutely right. It takes a little bit of blind faith in going like, okay, we've learned the math of it. This is the math. And we know this to be true. But on day 20, you might not even see a big difference. And then there's the complication that we see ourselves every day. And so we're not necessarily even noticing these gradual changes. You wind up getting kind of reinvigorated through needing a new pair of pants, and that becomes the barometer. Or, you know, huge movements on the scale that are really only trackable over long periods of time, like you said. So the in-between is difficult.
Yeah, and that's what was tough for me doing this transformation was, you know, what really helped me was when I went in and I told Grant, I was like, I want to look like a superhero. And he was like, okay. He wasn't like, he just was so confident, you know. No part of it was like, all right, let's see what we can do. He was like, yeah, we'll get you there. Because he knows the process. He's gone through the process himself. He's put so many people through the process, right? So that gave me confidence. However, when you're like 2 months in and you've been working your ass off, and when you look in the mirror and you look nothing like the guy that you want to look like, it's tough to keep going.
It really is. I was so startled when I saw the picture of you, because I had no idea you were even on that journey. And then I saw you and I was like, this is unreal. You know, it is super unreal for most people who saw that. It is as though you did it overnight. You know what I mean?
Right. And it took a full year.
Right. And I've been talked to by people who assume I did my thing overnight too. And I've basically been on a diet for 18 years, and there were massive swings in there. And I certainly in the last year have refined it and gotten it kind of to where I want it to be, and very close to like absolute goals, which is great. But the whole journey, it's a long time, and it's a lot of days where you really have to have affirmations of knowing you're on the right path, because it is very deceptive.
Yeah, I had this thing I remember, like, you know, so I sort of probably walked into a gym when I was 15, right? I was just like really, I was what you on the internet, they call skinny fat. So like I had no definition. I mean, I was also 15, but I had no definition, but also like a really small arms and shoulders and chest, right? So I walked into a gym when I was 15, and I was sort of off and on going, you know, with weightlifting. And I would have these times where I hadn't gone to the gym in a couple months, and I'd be like, man, if I'd been going to the gym every day for the last 2 months, I would feel so good about myself right now. And then ultimately that feeling was kind of the motivator where I was like, all right, the feeling you're fantasizing about right now, you actually can feel like that 2 months from now. Ultimately, that's not that far away. You're not going to look radically different in 2 months, but you will feel like you're like dialed in and you're on some kind of positive journey, right? So for me, that feeling, the ache for the way I wasn't feeling, the way I wanted to feel, was what motivated me ultimately to really commit to doing it, because I really wanted to feel like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That feeling, that it is a magical feeling. I also want to say, like, I never went into a gym at 15. And I think it took, I had a, even as an adult, when I started losing weight and stuff, I didn't go to a gym for a long time because I didn't want to be embarrassed about where I just felt like everybody at the gym was already going to look great. And so I'm going to show up and just be embarrassed about looking the way I did. I want to just say for the record, anytime somebody comes into the gym, and you can tell people who are new or even day one people at the gym, I am so excited for them because I know that they potentially are going to have like a magical journey. And, you know, now being at a place where every little tiny increment is really hard fought at this point. The changes that you're capable of making in the beginning are really radical compared to a year in or a few years in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Like, I'm not yet at the point where, I mean, I'm sure you know, you're so like muscle bound, honestly, that like you were saying, for you, first of all, it's a mind fuck to gain a couple pounds. To gain that couple pounds of muscle, but also you're like, I don't know what our genetic limits are, but you're a lot closer to yours than I am to mine. I'm just not like, I'm not a really big guy, but after you've been like training hard for even a year or a couple of years, it just gets harder and harder to add a rep, to add 5 pounds to it, you know?
Yeah. And, like I felt like we spent some time talking about how it is a very long journey, and I'm not denying that it is a very long journey. But I think for people in the beginning, I just don't want anybody to go like, "Well, I don't want to give up a year." But the amount of progress you can make in a couple of months as a brand new person who's never worked out is so much vaster than I could make today, or even you could make today. In the
oh,
next
dude!
2 months.
If I was where I am right now, and I could have the first 2 months of progress on top of it right now, I would be so diesel at the end of
yes.
2 months.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I want to say to people who are a little intimidated of going to gym is like, nobody's paying attention to you. Everyone's looking at themselves in the mirror. Nobody's right. like looking for you or judging you. The only guy I judge at the gym is the guy who's doing like super heavy weight with like terrible form, barely any motion, and being super loud and cocky about it. Yeah. That's the only guy I don't like.
And by the way, we're judging them poorly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the guy who's screaming and lifting way heavier than he needs to. Yes, and with no range of motion. Yeah, that guy's getting judged for sure. But anybody else, like, go to the gym and be overweight, and I am only rooting for you and excited for you.
I love going to our gym, too. I like the mix of people that are there, and I like that. But in some ways, it's a serious gym, you know? Like, people are... You got new people. You got people who've been there for a long time. But there's not, like... People aren't, like, hanging out and socializing. Everybody's sort of doing their own thing there.
Yeah. It is a gym for exercise, definitely, which is very... I found to be very rare in Los Angeles. There is a lot of socializing in gyms.
I walked by it a couple of days ago with Emily, and I was like, oh, man, I really miss that place.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Kumail, thank you so much for joining us on American Glutton Podcast. I really appreciate your time, and I am so excited to see. Oh, I want to talk about your podcast for a moment. You and Emily are doing a podcast that's just going to benefit people who are suffering from COVID-19, right?
Yeah, so we're basically, it's called Staying In with Emily and Kumail. We're just doing it for this quarantine period, and the money goes to three different organizations. One organization actually supplies and helps hospitals who are actually on the front lines dealing with the with patients who have COVID-19, giving them medical supplies and stuff. There's one organization that helps people in the service industry who are now out of a job, so provides them, you know, so many people have lost income because of this, so it provides relief to those people. And then there's an organization that provides food to people, mainly to children, because a lot of children, now that they can't go to school, a lot of kids rely on school meals for their healthy meals of the day. So there's an organization that assists with that. And the podcast is basically, we don't get into the science of it or anything. It's mostly me goofing around. And Emily is a therapist. She was, she's a writer now, but she was a practicing therapist for many years. She's got a master's degree in therapy. And so it's her sort of talking about techniques to cope with this weird situation we're in. But really, it's just sort of a candid conversation about how we're feeling, and mostly it's entertaining. You know, we really want it to be fun to listen to and funny. We also recommend movies and TV shows and video games and books, but it's sort of just about how to hang out at home and not go nuts.
Right, which I think is highly useful right now.
Yeah, man, it really is. People are, you know, having all kinds of reactions. It's been interesting. You know, I've weirdly gotten in touch with, I feel like I'm more in touch with people now than I've ever been. I've reached out to people who I hadn't talked to in 10 years and been like, wow, I really like this person. It's too bad that we sort of just lost contact. People have reached out to me that I haven't spoken to in 15, 20 years, honestly. So it's interesting. People are sort of all reconnecting, and everybody's going through this so differently. Even though it's a global thing, everybody's having such an individual experience of it and journey with it, you know? So I think the more that we can communicate our specific journeys through it, I think the more it feels like we're all in it together.
Yeah, it feels very valuable to do that. It's like a service. You're being of service.
Yeah, Emily, you know, I'm telling you, whoever listens to the podcast, she is made of wisdom. She's one of those people who'll just like casually say something, and I'm like, who said that? And she's like, I just did. I'm like, write that down. So she has a document that's just me telling her to be like, write that down. So she's like the perfect person to like give advice on this stuff.
That's awesome. I appreciate your time, and I look forward to one day working out with you again.
Oh, man, I cannot wait.
All right, Kumail. Be well. Stay safe.
All right. Thanks for having me, buddy. Stay safe.
And now for some Q&A. This question comes from Michael. He writes, hey, Ethan, I was wondering what your thoughts on supplements are. I'm currently 265, down from 300. I have a hard time reaching my protein goals and supplement with a powder. I also supplement with BCAAs, branched chain amino acids. Some people say they are a waste of money. Others don't. I was just wondering what your thoughts are. Thank you. Thanks for the question, Michael. Don't really take a lot of supplements. I take protein powder. I take whey protein in the morning and casein protein at night. I take casein protein at night because it is slower digesting so that hopefully the protein is getting into my system while I'm asleep. I don't really take anything else. I occasionally, when I'm doing, when I'm on a very strict cut, which I'm on maintenance right now, but when I'm really limiting my calories, I will make sure to take some omega-3s as a supplement. As far as protein goes, I don't know how much protein you're trying to get, but like if you're currently 265 and you wanted to get 260 grams of protein a day, that's roughly what I eat. It shouldn't be that hard. I would say to add a couple protein shakes during the day and, you know, eat some stuff that's really high in protein, like chicken breasts or fish or 0% fat Greek yogurt. Those are the sources of protein I get. But I don't know that the branched chain amino acids really can make up for not having protein. I don't take those. I have taken them and I didn't notice that they did anything, so I stopped taking them. That is what I've got for you, Michael. I hope that helps. Eat your protein and protein powder. If you have a question you'd like me to answer on the podcast, please submit it to AmericanGlutton.net. Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee, and as always, joined by my chaperone, Paige Dorian. Follow us on Instagram @AmericanGluttonPodcast. Sincerely.